Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dominic, a Thursday edition. That makes it Friday Eve up in here.
Happy Friday Eve to you, Crudy. Damn, time flies when you're having fun. Evan on the board, our fair audience. Great to be with you all.
Buddy, I've covered most of Western Wisconsin today. Started in Madison, went to La Crosse, went to Eau Claire, and now here I am back in the Solidarity Realty Studios back in Madison.
What a road warrior you are today, Crudy.
My hips, my arse, it's all kind of sore. Been in the car far too long. Got up early, went driving. But we need facilities, Dom. I keep telling you that. And I've got pressing matters next week in the Florida Keys. So anyways, we've picked out facilities. I feel good about that. And here's what else I feel pretty good about, all things considered. I'm out looking, driving Western Wisconsin. I did take the rural roads.
Nice.
From La Crosse. Well, really, I took the back roads all the way, you know, through Richland Center and Viroqua, all, you know, the back roads, 14 up to La Crosse. That's the way I used to go when I was in college. Then I took my real estate appointment. The new place, probably going to be over on 7th and State. You remember kind of going into downtown 7th and State? You'll learn it when we go broadcast up there. And so then I went the back way. I believe it's North 53. And then I cut across through Osseo, hop back on 94, got up to Eau Claire, through Eau Claire, up to Chippewa Falls. That's actually north of Eau Claire.
Oh, man.
Downtown, gorgeous, beautiful downtown Chippewa Falls. And I think we've got some office space picked out there as well. And then I'm like, very nice to meet you. I got to go.
I got to go.
Hopped in the car, barely pulled through a gas station and off on the road again and came helicoptering in.
Did you take the highway back this time, though, Crew?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
94. I drove with some alacrity. And you know, I got to the exit for University Ave, and I'm from Middleton, so I usually hop all the way on and drive to the office, University Ave in Madison. Except the guy in front of me had the intersection blocked. And it wasn't just me. There was like 7 cars that had stacked up behind me coming off the Beltline.
Now, when you say blocked, he was like not moving in his lane, or was he?
Well,
in the
he was
of the
actually about 20 feet back from the intersection.
And no cars in front of him, so he was like car lengths like behind the light.
Yes, and I've heard there's press pads. I'm not clear that that's the case, but you know, there are clearly cameras on some of these intersections. But if no car is at the light, sometimes you don't get a light. So I honked, and he finally pulled forward. And the woman behind me got out of her car and came.
Oh, no.
She came, and I'm like, I know, I'm stuck. And you heard me, because I was talking to you, bitch.
Yes,
whining up. Son of a...
You know, I don't know if people need to hear the play-by-play. And I was, you know, I got to hear it live. I could tell you're a former sports guy, Crudy, because you were very descriptive about what was happening.
I had to drive over the median, do a hard right, do a quick U-turn through traffic, and haul ass down University Ave so I could be here with you on the radio. But here's the encouraging part.
What's that?
A, the play-by-play of the
jacknut
that would have sat at that intersection forever. I swear to God, we would still be sitting there. But above and beyond that, here's the encouraging part. As I drove all through rural Wisconsin, the only political signs I saw were for Janet Protasiewicz.
Really?
Judge Janet Sines saw a lot of them in rural Wisconsin on many of the prominent roadways. So I did not, you know, not 94. They weren't billboards. I'm just talking about those, you know, front yard signs.
Yeah,
the,
little yard
signs. Farmer style signs, that kind of stuff. So I took encouragement by that. I've always thought when you see a sign in your neighbor's yard, and you know your neighbor's thinking like you are, I think it's just encouraging. It makes it more likely that you're going to tell someone, hey, I'm voting for Janet Protasiewicz. I think you should as well. I'd like to think that talk radio has a similar impact on the community. You know, if you hear your neighbors, if you're, and by the way, the phones are open. You can hear your neighbors right here on the Devil's Advocates radio show or yourself at 844-967-2789. It's a town hall. Certainly it's a Wisconsin town hall, but the, you know, the good part, Dom, the good part was we're coming to provide alternative talk radio, but I got to tell you, I was listening to our competitors. Less than this fine product, certainly. And I haven't even gotten on topic yet, but I got to tell you, it's less than this. Dan Bongino heard some of that up in the Eau Claire market. And I also heard Clay and Buck. Not a big fan of the Clay or the Buck, but I heard them. But let's talk about Protasiewicz. Our friend Jesse Apoyan at the Cap Times, she's got a little piece. Are you with me, Dom? I'm not clear if he is. Protasiewicz would enjoy taking a fresh look at Wisconsin voting maps. I would enjoy if she did. Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Janet Protasiewicz said Wednesday she would enjoy taking a fresh look at Wisconsin's electoral maps if elected to the state Supreme Court. A look that would come from a court led by a liberal majority for the first time since 2008. I would anticipate that I would enjoy taking a fresh look at the gerrymandering question, that's a quote from Protasiewicz, on a recent episode of Wedge Issues, the Cap Times political podcast. Protasiewicz's comments about redistricting aren't surprising, as she said at a January candidate forum that the state's maps are rigged, but they serve as an illustration of lines ostensibly nonpartisan candidates walk as judicial races become increasingly driven by partisan influences. In other words, she's starting to say the quiet part out loud, people. Here's more. The Milwaukee County judge made similar assertions on the latest episode of Wedge Issues, released Thursday, adding that she would not recuse herself from hearing a challenge to the maps, despite her comments on the campaign trail. I think anybody with any sense knows our maps are rigged, Protasiewicz said. I'm amongst the most We have amongst the most gerrymandered maps in the entire country. I have told people, I don't think you can sell to any rational person that the maps are fair. If she's elected, Protasiewicz said, and here's again a quote, I would anticipate that at some point we'll be looking at those maps, adding the state's intense and close statewide elections are not reflected in the dominant Republican majorities in the legislature. Protasiewicz, a liberal and former state Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly. And I always hate, Dom, that they call him that because he was a Winker appointee, a Scott Walker appointee. He didn't actually earn his position on the court. And when he was placed upon the ballot statewide, he was defeated by 163,000 votes. That's why he's not incumbent state Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly. By the way, Dom, he's the real conservative.
I've heard the ads.
They're battling on April 4th for a seat on the state's high court, vacated by the retiring conservative, Patience Rogensack. You got this, Dom, or you want me to keep going?
No, I got to jump in here, Crew. The race has attracted national attention and has already reached the milestone of becoming the most expensive judicial contest in American history.
Folks, we're number one!
We're a part of history! In addition to her criticism of the state's legislative boundaries, Protasiewicz has also been outspoken in her support for abortion access, another issue all but certain to come before the state's high court as a challenge to Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban makes its way through the legal system. Kelly has accused Protasiewicz of planning to place her thumb on the scales of justice to ensure the results satisfy her personal interests. If we do not resist this assault on our Constitution and our liberties, we will lose the rule of law and we will find ourselves saddled with the rule of Janet.
Oh, ain't he clever? The rule of Janet.
Like, because you like, can't say your last name.
When it was the rule of Kelly, the rule of Dan. Was the rule of Dan better? Because Dan's got a judicial record, you know, from the prior appointment by Scott Walker. Look at... We'll get to that, but it's pretty malfeasant.
A little bit more here from the Cap Times, Jessica Poyen and others. Protasiewicz called the Cap Times. She believes the public has a right to know the personal values of candidates they elect, arguing that her personal beliefs don't prevent her from applying the law in cases where the two conflict. Quote, I think that everybody knows that anybody running for any type of office has their own personal opinions and their own personal values. And the question is, do you want to hide those opinions and those values from the public? Are they entitled to know what your personal feelings are? I mean, we've all got them. So the question is, do we hide them or do we let the public know?
Jesse Poyen.
You let the public know, baby. Yeah, Jesse Poyen reporting at the Cap Times along with Jack Kelly.
Well, Dan Kelly also lets the public know.
Jack Kelly. Oh, sorry.
Dan Kelly. I'm talking about the candidate, dude. I know what I meant to say, I think. Dan Kelly, he lets the public know what he thinks of them. Usually it's a general contemptuousness, isn't it? I mean, his tone, his attitude. When we read it like that, and I realize we're giving tone when we read the Dan Kelly quotes, but that's how he talks.
Yeah. Well, and he deserves it. He deserves the mocking. I mean, this guy, if you believe some people, like, I don't know, the recombobulation dude, Dan Schaefer, he has an opinion piece. He says, and I would tend to agree, that Dan Kelly is a threat to democracy in Wisconsin. Let's not forget, man, the reporting here in the last couple of weeks, Dan Kelly was on the payroll. Dan Kelly provided, you know, what, legal advice on the fraudulent elector scheme, right? How to overturn the will of the people. Dan Kelly provided legal advice, and he won't tell you about it because of attorney-client privilege.
You know, my takeaway from the Schaefer piece, and we'll tell you, but my takeaway is when you think of Dan Kelly and how he would govern, it would be just like re-electing Michael Gableman.
Right.
They are the two most analogous former examples of an appointed Supreme Court justice. Kelly equals Gableman. Devils equal super cool.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. You can join us on the lines at 844-967-2789.
Dan Schaefer, he writes the, what, Recombobulation Area blog down. And our friends down at WCPT 820 AM and Heartland Signal, they're our allies. We play out there evening times. Not live. They wish we played live. But anyways, they've got a piece, Dom. You brought it to my attention. I'm going to let you steal Dan Schaefer's glory. What is this piece about?
Well,
Dan Kelly.
Yeah, it is about Dan Kelly, and it is entitled, opinion piece here from Dan Schaefer, Dan Kelly is a threat to democracy in Wisconsin. Now, Crudy, and it's a fairly long article, but I want to skip through part of it, but I want you to kind of remind people. You talked about this Hagedorn vote against the Trump campaign. You know, basically the last line in the sand here, we kept democracy by one vote, right? That was because of Hagedorn.
It is. Hagedorn was... The swing vote, it was a 4-3 vote, and there were three conservatives, including the soon-to-retire Patience Rogensack, that were willing to take up the theory. I I often call it 171,000 absentee ballots. They wanted to set aside in Dayton, Milwaukee counties. That's what the Trump team was asking for. Three conservatives said, yeah, we're kosher with that. Three liberals said, oh my God, they're trying to overturn democracy in the state of Wisconsin. And it was really only through the judicial independent of sorts, Brian Hagedorn. Remember, he's no independent. He was clearly a Republican partisan who was appointed, he did win election, but Hagedorn served as Walker's attorney. He's the guy right. that drafted Act 10, at least legislatively, my understanding.
So when Dan Schaefer, he quotes Hagedorn in his ruling that saved democracy in Wisconsin.
I can give you that part. In those rulings, Justice Brian Hagedorn, again, those were the December of 2020, after Joe Biden had won the state of Wisconsin by about 21,000 votes. And our friend Maggie Dawn often comes on the air. She was the one sitting across from Jim Troupas and the Trump legal team as they battled and challenged vote by vote by vote. And they were trying to make the local elections officials default on the legal timelines of certifying the outcome of the election. And I think in no small part, Maggie Dawn saw through it, jammed it through, wouldn't accept that, and pushed any ballot challenges through in a timely fashion so that the state of Wisconsin could certify their ballots. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, again, by a 4-3 ruling on December 14th, the very day that the actual Democratic electorates, the 10 from the Wisconsin, you know, appointed by Tony Evers, they cast their ballots for Joe Biden. But there were also 10 false, fraudulent Trump electors, and they apparently were being advised by Dan Kelly, the former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice.
The guy that wants to be a Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice once again.
So in the Wisconsin Voter Alliance case, as it's sometimes called, here's how Hagedorn laid it out. Something far more fundamental than the winner of Wisconsin's electoral votes is implicated in this case. At stake, in some measure, is faith in our system of free and fair elections, a feature central to the enduring strength of our constitutional republic. It can be easy to blithely move on to the next case with a petition so obviously lacking, but this is sobering. The relief being sought by the petitioners is the most dramatic invocation of judicial power I have ever seen.
The most dramatic invocation of judicial power I have ever seen. And the other three conservatives on that court were totally fine with it.
But if the court had a different makeup, that's the question, right?
And that is the question, and that is exactly what Dan Schaefer brings up in his piece. If Dan Kelly has still been on the court for that December vote, all evidence suggests that it would have gone differently. Kelly was endorsed by Trump in 2020, is generally aligned with the farther right wing of the state's Republican Party, and was one of the featured speakers on the Republican Party's Election Integrity Roundtable Tour, spreading lies about the 2020 results. Kelly has also repeatedly ripped Hagedorn, the only conservative justice, to uphold the 2020 election results, saying that he's supremely unreliable, that we were a little bit surprised at how he turned out, and even went so far to say that he would not endorse fellow conservative Jennifer Doerr if she were to win the primary over his concerns that Doerr could be like Hagedorn on the bench. In all likelihood, Kelly and a 5-2 conservative majority would have thrust the state into a full-blown constitutional crisis in December of 2020. Hagedorn's swing vote would not have made the difference. It's a good thing Kelly lost his last bid for a full 10-year term in the spring election that year. It doesn't seem like an overstatement to suggest that voters choosing Kurovsky may have saved democracy in Wisconsin. Because around the time when Kurovsky was ruling to uphold the results of the 2020 presidential election, Dan Kelly was working on something to do just the opposite. Kelly had been hired by the Republican Party as a special counsel, according to bombshell reporting that Milwaukee Journal Sentinel was at the center of the discussion in December 2020 with a top Republican Wisconsin Republicans over their highly controversial plan to covertly convene a group of Republicans inside the state capitol in the weeks following Trump's loss to Joe Biden to sign paperwork falsely claiming to be electors. That report quotes a deposition to the January 6th committee from former Republican Party Chairman Andrew Hitt, one of the state's 10 false electors, where he said he had extensive conversations with Kelly about the fake electors plot. Now, Kelly said recently what? It was like a 30-minute conversation. But Hitt testified that he had extensive conversations.
Well, they paid him, what, $9,000? It's a lot of jing for a 30-minute phone call down.
Well, let's not forget, the RNC, the National Party, paid him over $100,000.
Well, who's counting?
Nah, I mean, you know, but he should be on the court, right?
Well, we'd have President Trump right now. If Dan Kelly had his way?
Well, right. I mean, this is the real deal, folks. These things matter.
Come back with us. Devil's Advocates. Always matters that you listen and call 844-967-2789.
That's a lot of nuts!
Were you trying to get crazy with this, eh? Don't you know I'm loco?
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. That makes it Friday Eve up in here. I don't know if you noticed, Friday's technically our favorite day of the week. We'll get to that one tomorrow. Hope you join us for all the big shows. 5 days a week, that's all we ask. But Dom, we got a caller, and we'll start there at 844-967-2789, because we like audience participation, especially when it's someone we know, like Andrew from Detroit Rock City. How you doing, Andrew?
Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Devils. Hey, Crudy. You know, I was there the date, the time. Me and Puff the Magic Dragon were there to trade for some swag. You didn't show. I'm just saying.
Wait, what day was this, Andrew?
You know the date and time. You know, I'm trying to keep everything over here. So.
Crudy, no show. Hey, come on, man.
Or maybe I was there, Andrew, and I can't talk about it on the radio. Yeah. You got any political thoughts, though, that we can talk about on the radio?
And maybe I was there and I don't remember what happened, but that's all right, too. I think Wisconsin is going to be very smart and vote for Judge Janet. But just remember, we have just Jack Smith out there hunting down these people with the fake electors and this and that. So, you know, even if he does get elected, which he won't, he's got to worry about Jack Smith. So, you know, guys, don't worry. Calm down and just Jack.
You know, I would love to have your confidence, Andrew, that Jack Smith, the special counsel, the guy heading up the January 6th investigation for the Department of Justice, was going to do something about the fake electors. And I certainly think that was a criminal scheme. That was the paperwork coup. That was, you know, the less violent version of the coup. But I certainly think it was every bit as damaging, every bit as premeditated, and if executed properly, would have changed the outcome, the will of the election, and the will of the American people, Andrew.
Yeah, it may not have had the violent part of it, but it was certainly an important part of the conspiracy, Andrew.
And unfortunately, unlike your attorney general, Dana, what's that, Andrew?
He was committing a fraud on the people of Wisconsin.
But our state AG,
people of Michigan.
Well, the difference between our two respective attorney generals, and they're both Democrats, and I like them both, and they both appeared on this show, Andrew. But Dana Nessel, your attorney general from Michigan, is making this a state-level issue. She's not waiting for Jack Smith in the Department of Justice, because we've waited too long, Andrew. You know, it's been 2 years plus since this was perpetrated, this coup attempt. I mean, hell, they tried it in Brazil. They were taking people to prison like the next day. Why is it taking 2 years and we don't have a single meaningful indictment of those the you know, the leaders, the inciters, not just the violent insurrectionist. I'm sorry, I'll let you talk now.
How about going after him civilly? If we can't go after him criminally, how about we go after him civilly? And the same thing with Johnson over there, Ron the Jerk Johnson, you know?
Well,
go after him civilly.
Ron doesn't have any legal culpability, I wouldn't think. But, Dom, there was a big update on the civil side and the ability to sue the former president for his incitement. Now, Trump has been asking the Department of Justice, the Biden Department of Justice, to give him sort of an immunity shield. And my understanding is he wants this because he claims he was acting in his role as the president of the United States. But of course, the judge, and I know you've got this down, but the judge said no. Much like prior rulings, if you incite violence and violence ensues, you've lost the right to claim a First Amendment sort of a free speech defense. And apparently that opens the former president up to civil lawsuit, does it not, Dom?
It certainly does, Crudy. A couple of stories on this, kind of a big deal. Sarah Burris is the one I'm quoting here at the Raw story. Former President Trump is claiming absolute immunity from any accountability for the speech he made at the Ellipse on January 6th, in which he called on the crowd to march to the Capitol. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on Congress and the attempt to overthrow the 2020 election called witnesses that revealed Trump knew that his supporters were armed and told the Secret Service to remove the metal detectors because they weren't there to hurt him. Trump even made the call to the Secret Service from the podium to let people in, regardless of what they were carrying. I remember, Crudy, I was watching this live. I couldn't believe what he was saying. Oh, let him in. All my people in the back. Let him in. Let him in. Burris reports, given Donald Trump was still the president at the time of the speech, he argued he has immunity against prosecution. In a new filing, the Justice Department, however, is arguing in new court documents that it isn't the case. A quote from the filing, Nixon v. Fitzgerald, establishes a rule of absolute immunity for the president's official acts. It is not a rule of absolute immunity for the president regardless of the nature of his acts. Here, the district court concluded that plaintiff's complaints plausibly allege that Trump's speech at the rally on January 6th precipitated the ensuing attack on the Capitol, and in particular, that the complaints plausibly allege that the former president's speech encouraged imminent private violent action and was likely to produce such action, the filing continues. The United States expresses no view on that conclusion or on the truth of the allegations in plaintiff's complaints, but the United States' view, such incitement of imminent private violence would not be within the outer perimeter of the office of the President of the United States. The court filing them makes it clear that they reject the idea, and Trump is covered under the absolute immunity speech. In this court, President Trump has not challenged the district court's conclusion, reiterated by plaintiffs on appeal, that the complaints plausibly allege that his speech instigated the attack on the Capitol. Instead, his briefs only advance a single categorical argument: a president is always immune from any civil suits based on a speech on matters of public concern, even if that speech also constitutes incitement to imminent private violence, the court filing says. It goes on to make this kicker, as Sarah Burris concludes. The United States respectfully submits that the court should reject that categorical argument. And because that is the only argument the former president has pressed on appeal, the court could affirm the district court's order on that narrow ground without attempting to comprehensively define the boundaries of the president's immunity for his speech on matters of public concern, including when and how to draw a line between the president's official and electoral speech. So the way they filed it may actually bode poorly for Donald Trump as well.
844-967-2789. Andrew from D-Town, our most recent caller, he was referencing Dan Kelly. And Dan Kelly, we've learned from recent reporting and Dan Schaefer's piece, in part lifts, brings to light Dan Kelly's representation during this coup attempt, this procedural coup that was being perpetrated in part in the state of Wisconsin. And it happened on December 14th. And we know who the criminals are. I allege criminals, because they signed their name as false Trump electors. But they were also given legal advice, not just by Rudy Giuliani, but also apparently by attorney Dan Kelly, now Supreme Court candidate Dan Kelly. And Dan Kelly, you know, because he doesn't really want to acknowledge what sort of work he did for either the RNC or the Wisconsin Republican Party. But what's his claim? Attorney-client privilege, right? That's the only claim he could really use to shield that, except in that if you're perpetrating a crime, if the advice that you are giving is a crime, well, there's a fraud crime exception. My understanding, Dom, I'm no lawyer, but we've had enough of them on the air to discuss things like, you know, fraud crime exceptions that I would think that Dan Kelly would fall in that hole. So effectively, I don't think Kelly can shield what advice he gave to these fraudulent Trump electors here in the state of Wisconsin, which Crudy would allege, you know, barstool lawyer that I am, I would allege they're criminal and they should be charged criminally. And I wish them.
Yeah, well, you're right. But
the attorney general of the state of Wisconsin will get off his ass and do something about it because they broke state law. And if Jack Kelly also indicts, he can indict them under federal crimes. But they committed crimes in the Wisconsin state capitol right up that road from me. And they should be charged under Wisconsin law. And Dana Nessel, my understanding, the attorney general of Michigan, she's pursuing the fraudulent Trump electors in Michigan. Why aren't you, Josh Call?
That's a great question, Crudy. I would love to see our AG get involved in this. I mean, this guy's, come on, man. The guy's running for Wisconsin Supreme Court. I mean, and he was involved. He was providing legal paid services to those that were perpetrating the crime. I mean, that is the reality of the situation. He might, oh, no big deal, no big deal. It was paperwork crimes. They said they were electors and what? Come on. But that was part of the plot. That was a spoke in the wheel. It was part of the overall scheme.
Well, I don't know how that fraud, that commission of fraud, is any different other than the grand conspiracy. I mean, hell, we found out everyone from the Republican Party newly elected chairman, Brian Schimming, who I used to like, to Dan Kelly giving legal advice, to Jim Troupas, we've got false Trump electors, 10, including a Wisconsin elections commissioner. We've got 15 state reps and one senator. Don't want to forget you, Andre Jack. You're the only senator that signed on, but 14 assembly people, two of whom ran to what? Represent the 8th Senate District of the state of Wisconsin.
The one district of whom I live, yes.
Won the primary, Dom. Yes. Insurrectionist Canodal. Or perhaps it's a silent K. I don't care to learn your name properly, as I find you to be an insurrectionist. I'll learn when your indictment drops.
It's Nodal. It'd be nice.
I'm not actually saying that Nodal has committed a crime, but he is supportive of the insurrection. He wrote a letter to the former Vice President Pence on January 5th saying, let the malfeasance happen. Let it brew for like 10 days. Yes, kick it back to the state legislatures.
And then what? Then what will the state legislature do? What's the next plan, right? Steal underwear and make profit, right? What's step two? Well, step two is to what? Insert your fraudulent electors. Have the legislator kick out what's happening. You got people waiting in the wings, and bada bing, bada boom, forget about it, Wisconsin. Although the majority of you people voted for someone else, the machinations, the machine, the conspiracy of the Republicans and MAGA, they're going to throw out the will of the people so they can conserve their power. Dan Schaefer concludes in his piece, once again, at the Heartland Signal, when Kelly announced that as a speaker of this election integrity roundtable, Protasiewicz responded as such. There are two reasons Donald Trump lost more than 60 court cases trying to overturn the results, the law and the facts. It's too bad that Dan Kelly continues to join Mike Gabelman in courting extremists who oppose democracy. A Supreme Court justice needs to be independent and follow the rule of law despite their own personal beliefs. Dan Kelly and Mike Gabelman have demonstrated to the citizens of Wisconsin that they are not fit to be on the bench. As Schaefer concludes, she's right about that. If Dan Kelly were elected, the future of democracy in Wisconsin would be at risk. That's not a chance any of us should be willing to take. And I would also note that when Protasiewicz released that statement, it was unknown, to my understanding, until the reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that Dan Kelly was on the payroll of both the RNC and the Wisconsin GOP, providing legal services and advice regarding their efforts with a fraudulent elector scheme.
Tom, that feels like a bright line in the sand for me. That whole January 6th thing. If you're on the wrong side of the Constitution, I don't mean maybe your opinion's wrong, but if you've taken an active role to overturn the outcome of the election, to overcome the peaceful transition of power, to replace the will of Wisconsin's voters with your own, that's a bright line in the sand, man. Be it Schimming, be it Ron Johnson, be it Brian Kelly, Dan Kelly. No offense to Fancy Brian. It's a big ass line in the sand, and they've all crossed it. Come back, more Devils. I think I'm going crazy.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. With a little more heads up, I'm sure you could have played some thematic music for me, Ebone. But I'd like to lay out for you and Dom and the audience a little movie review meets a book review. It's all combined. Dom, may I ask you, have you seen The Cocaine Bear yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
Doesn't it look intriguing?
I saw the advertisements. I've been following them on Twitter since the first advertisement came out because it's absolutely my kind of terrible, awesome movie.
Cocaine Bear.
I'm very aware of Cocaine Bear.
If you're unaware, there's a movie in the theaters, almost number one in the box office last weekend. Number two, I believe. Cocaine Bear. And then there's this new book that just dropped, The Courage to Be Free by Ron DeSantis. And in case you're unaware, we're going to review both of them through the words of Alexandria Petri. I'm going to share this from the Washington Post. I think it's important. If I can do so, I'm going to jump right in. So what's the plot, Dom? Cocaine Bear. A bear does cocaine. And a group of people have to fight that bear. And the Courage to Be Free, God only knows. Here are some of the chapter titles to give you an idea of the reading experience. The Magic Kingdom of Woke Corporatism. The Liberal Elite's Praetorian Guard. Power in a Post-Constitutional Order. What does that mean? After a few stories about Little League, Ron DeSantis' time at Yale, meeting his future wife and his years in Congress, any glimmer of human through line vanishes. DeSantis is elected governor and tells his last humanizing anecdote, a confusing story about having obtained bottles of water from the Sea of Galilee with, apparently wanting to baptize the kids, Dom, then having thrown them away by the cleaning staff at the governor's mansion, then being sent some more, water from the Sea of Galilee, which he kept on his desk until it was time to baptize his third child. And as Petri writes, this story makes Ted Cruz's anecdote about buying his wife 100 unwanted cans of soup as a post-wedding gift seem almost relatable.
What?
But odd and off-putting as the anecdote is, in the dozens of pages that follow, you begin to long for anything resembling it, anything that would indicate the book was written by a human being. Instead, you get sentences like, in Florida, we recognize the implications of the ESG movement in both policy and constitutional accountability by prohibiting the state's pension fund managers from using ESG criteria when making investment decisions. Oh, that sounds like a page-turner, Dom.
Curdy, let's talk about the characters.
Who are the characters in Cocaine Bear, Dom?
Cocaine Bear. Cocaine Bear is full of wonderful, easy-to-grasp characters. I love them all. Actress Margot Martindale has a scene-stealing turn as a flirty park ranger who is a very bad shot. The late Ray Liotta is great as a drug kingpin, ringleader of the Bluegrass Conspiracy. Alden Einrich delighted me as Leota's grieving son. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. was great. Of course, it is sad when the bear gets the characters, but they are very fun to watch. I rooted for them or against them and for the bear exactly as the movie demanded.
Now, Tom, who are the characters in The Courage to be Free?
Crudy, the only character is Ron DeSantis. He has a wife and children and some other acquaintances whom he describes as having shown up to give speeches on his behalf to thunderous applause. There's something strange about describing how much applause these people got for complimenting you at your own campaign rallies. She notes, DeSantis gives little indication of his personality other than that he feels he invariably knows the right thing to do in all situations, though he does include the self-deprecating aside that, quote, for me, I reject the idea that I would strike a balance between academic achievement and athletic success because I was not willing to give less than 100% to either baseball or my academics.
That's why I didn't play football in college, Tom, because I wanted to
and you were
slough
a mass
off
Tom
it.
Major.
Come on, man.
You
I got all 100
anymore?
18-ish credits required for graduation. Tom.
Crudy, is the writing good?
Cocaine bears, including such line as an apex predator, high on cocaine, and you're headed right towards it. And the bear, it effing did cocaine. Those are some fine lines. The Courage to be Free, Dom, includes such lines as the failure to robustly weld authority permits the unaccountable Leviathan to metastasize. She notes, this is a description of the federal government. But Dom, here's the real question. Is it scary?
Crudy, cocaine bear? I would say it's more gory than scary. I laughed often. The Courage to be Free from DeSantis? It is terrifying. The writing almost lulls you to sleep. Here's a quote. At the end of the day, the remooring of the constitutional ship of state will provide the needed foundation for the reinvigoration of a society rooted in freedom, justice, and the rule of law. And Petrie writes, but then you jerk awake, realizing that Ron DeSantis has just said in the most convoluted way possible that the Constitution has already lapsed and he is thus justified in imposing his will on the people because he is right and they will thank him for it. Not to mention how blithely he suggests that his state's response to COVID-19 was an unqualified success.
Who does it want us to root against? Well, Dom and Cocaine Bear, I guess we're supposed to be rooting for the people, question mark? A bear bites a guy's leg off, but it's hard not to root for Cocaine Bear. A bear who has done cocaine. And the Courage to be Free, Ron DeSantis has two enemies. Anyone who disagrees with him, I share DeSantis' sentiment in that regard. Yeah. This includes down the elite, the media, Disney, the federal government, and countless others. And the word was, I guess you'd have to read the book. I don't intend to. He hunts down all instances of the verb to be and replaces them mercilessly with the word, with the verb represent. Yale represented such a serious cultural shock for me. The people there represented the salt of the earth. This leftism also represented a morality play. As communities in the Navy go, the SEALs represented the top of the heap. The victory represented a vindication for the idea that hard work pays off. Passing major legislation without majority support in the majority party represented political malpractice. This is not even all of them. I genuinely think this could be a replace all situation.
Find and replace. Crudy, what kind of thing would you text your friends while you consumed it? Cocaine Bear? Cocaine Bear is phenomenal. The Courage to be Free? This book will never end, yet is somehow only 262 pages long. It's no Cocaine Bear.
I think, you know, the fact that we've reviewed both of these very important topics, Cocaine Bear and The Courage to be Free, for the audience concurrently, we've saved your time and energy. One is worthy of your effort. Go see Cocaine Bear. I hear it's a
hoot. Thank you, Alexandra Petri from the Washington Post.
Unless you got a wobbly table and you need a book to slide underneath, skip the DeSantis. Come back. Come back. More Devils.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.